From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Get ready for this ride later on tonight, the secret code on your hands and so much more. Here's what's happening. In less than 2 hours, Julian Assange from WikiLeaks is supposed to make a dramatic announcement about something. It's hinted to be about Hillary Clinton. We'll all find out. First of all, he canceled a dramatic London balcony address on Tuesday in favor of a video presentation in Berlin after the WikiLeaks developed specific information regarding his safety. Some believe the video announcement by the WikiLeaks founder could be an October surprise geared towards the U.S. presidential election. Supporters of GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump have said they believe the announcement will be damaging to the candidacy of Democratic rival Hillary Clinton. We shall see. We'll be monitoring that situation for you tonight. That is in less than 2 hours. Russia has suspended an agreement with us on the disposal of surplus weapons-grade plutonium. It's the latest sign of worsening relations. In a decree, President Vladimir Putin accused the U.S. of creating a threat to strategic stability as a result of unfriendly actions towards Russia. Sad story out of Killed, Mississippi. Two police officers in Mississippi are on paid leave after a 3-year-old daughter of one of the officers died unattended in a patrol car. They had the air conditioning running, but the baby died. This flu season, many children who are expecting drops in their nostrils are going to get needles in their arms instead. That's because a federal health committee has decided that the nasal flu vaccine, it's called FluMist, should no longer be used because it has been less effective, they say, in protecting people the past couple of flu seasons. For the first time since FluMist was introduced 13 years ago, everyone now is supposed to get the shot. Dr. Gary Ridenour with us. Gary, of course, I don't get the flu shot. I don't tell people to or not to. But in this particular case, it looks like they're trying to push the vaccine again.
Well, they are. And the biggest problem is that, start off with, a kindergartner has to get 6 vaccines by law.
Ouch.
To get into school. In a couple of states, it's 10 vaccines. And they're going round and round on the vaccine thing. The vaccine from the last 2 years had only 2 vaccines in it and was only 17% effective. So now they've come out with a quadrivalent vaccine, which means it's got 4 vaccines in it. I call it the shotgun theory. You know, if you miss with 2, let's shoot with four. Yeah, let's see if we can get it this time.
The flu, the common flu every year, Gary, kills about 36,000 people in the United States. Now, that's the common flu. If that would have happened with Zika, for example, people would be panicking, would they not?
Yeah, they will. And the Zika so far only has one dead, and it's my book, Zika Conspiracy, is on Kindle now.
Good for you.
And give you more information on the Zika. But the problem is that the CDC spends billions of dollars just scaring everybody about you got to get your vaccine. And they found out last year that if you skipped a year and then got this year's vaccine, it was 86% more effective.
All right, Gary, keep in touch. We'll watch this. It's the flu season coming up. Well, you know, one of the ways to find out if you have diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is to check your glucose levels with a blood test. Well, now, the blood testing, of course, has been the standard option for checking glucose levels. But a new technology could allow non-invasive testing, get this, via a contact lens that samples glucose levels in tears. So they put a contact lens in your eye, grab the tears, and then they check that level. That's not bad. Hey, what's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Stephen Cates. But before we do, Dr. Sky, again, our condolences on the passing of your father, Steve.
Well, George, thank you so much. And I want to thank you for the kind words that you shared with this audience regarding my dad's passing, as well as All the many listeners, George, that sent me
their
wonderful condolences at my Stephen Cates Facebook page.
He's up there with my dad now. They're probably listening to the show going,
I
go
hope
forward,
they
Stephen.
Are. You bet, George. And like many others out there, I believe, like you, and I'm sure many others, that we will one day see our loved ones in the afterlife.
Yeah.
But, George, in the sky is always exciting things, as we know here on this particular show. The 59th anniversary of America's, and I should say the world's first, to make a correction there, first of the man-made spacecraft, naturally the Sputnik 1. This object, believe it or not, folks, was some 23 inches in diameter, weighed about 184 pounds. And what's fascinating about it is that this particular spacecraft at the time was not the object that many people were actually watching. They weren't really seeing the Sputnik because it was so small. They were watching the booster rocket that went around the
That's
Earth,
right.
But it transmitted for about 3 months, as many know, on 20 and 40 megahertz. Now moving into this most fascinating subject, George, about 50 years of space exploration. If we go back, even though this is the 59th anniversary, just 50 years into space, there were about 6,581 spacecraft ever launched. The statistics tell us 53% were Russian, 27% were American. And right now, for people who are wondering, we now currently, according to reliable sources like the Goddard Space Flight Center, there list 2,271 satellites currently in orbit, and 1,324 of those are actually from Russia. But what's fascinating about that, we're going to be seeing a whole new generation, as we talked about with Elon Musk, moving on to Mars and so much, George, in the realm of near-Earth objects and spacecraft. But our live sky is the most important part, I think, of this radio show for the listeners. And this month, as we do a quick sneak preview of October, we find Venus, George, in the southwest tonight, and for those observers who saw it beforehand, a beautiful conjunction happened with Venus and the Moon. You'll see that happening with Mars as we move on to the 8th of October. And then this month starts the first of the two supermoons. The big full moon that we're going to see later this month is going to be fascinating. It's called the full Hunter Moon, and that takes place on the night of the 15th and 16th. It all builds up to that super of all supermoons, the one we have in November, the closest of all of 2016. Exciting events in the realms of astronomy, space, aviation, and weather. Check us out at drsky.com. And George, as you know, always remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
Absolutely. And again, thank you, Stephen, for being on. You know, when my dad died 5 years ago, I was scheduled to do the program, and I did. I did the show because I felt that
Absolutely.
He would want me to.
And, absolutely, George. And again, I appreciate your feelings and sympathy toward my father and to all those who've lost loved ones out there. Again, I'm sure, George, like we both talked about a long time ago, I'm sure we'll all get to see each other in life.
No rush, but we will get there.
You bet, brother.
Thanks,
Thank
Stephen. You. Be well. Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Now, you know, every month we feature two podcasters from all over the planet. These are dedicated journalists and broadcasters and people who are into their subject matter who don't get the kind of exposure that we have on this huge program. So Tom and I decided, along with executive producer Lisa, hey, let's feature some of these podcasters. Let's give them an opportunity to tell the world what they do. Tonight we feature Jim Paris Live. Listen to this.
Can you tell by someone's birth date or the number of letters in their name whether they could be the Antichrist? You've heard this whole thing, Ronald Wilson Reagan 666, these kinds of things. Can we use people's birth dates or the number of letters in their name to find any meaning?
Well, you know, my approach on the identity of the Antichrist is much more pragmatic, because there's so many different ways we can look at it. What area of the world will the Antichrist be from? My pragmatic approach is we will know the identity of the Antichrist when we first see animal sacrifices on the Temple Mount and that person stops the animal sacrifice. Then all the speculation and all the different interpretations will be a moot point, because from that point forward, there will be 1,290 days until the end.
Jim Paris Live, that's the podcast. And, of course, Jim Paris is the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. He's been a regular guest here on Coast to Coast as well, and also participated in the Holiday Magic Coast-style CD, where he played some great music well. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, George. Good to be back with you, as always.
And by the way, good job on your podcast. Tell me, what got you into doing that?
Well, you know, I started on my high school radio station, and I have had talk shows on and off for probably 30 years. And I've kind of reached the age that I just want to talk about things I'm interested in. So sometimes I'll get an email from somebody, or they'll say, wow, one week you're talking about UFOs, the next week you're talking about the Bible, and then you're talking martial arts and self-defense. How does this all fit together? And my answer is Jim Paris. Those are things I'm interested in, and those are the things I talk about on the show. It's really a story of my life and things that I find fascinating.
And for people who want to listen to you, Jim, how do they find you?
Yes, so we've got a direct page set up. We've got the iPhone app, the Android app, the live stream 24/7, all that. It is at jimparislive.com.
Simple enough. Thanks, Jim, and continued success to you. And we'll talk to you soon enough on other things that you've done for us on Coast to Coast. The fourth quarter got off to a weak start for U.S. stock investors on Monday. Financials, consumer staples, and utilities all lower, and big banks, they're declining too. Is this a trend? Some people say yes. Let's check in a moment with Catherine Austin Fitz, who is going to fly into our studio next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Okay, we're going to try something different. We have installed a brand new teleportation device that some scientists have built for us. And at the push of a button, I am going to teleport Catherine Austin Fitz from San Francisco to my studio here in Los Angeles. Danny, you ready to touch this little gizmo? And we'll touch a few buttons. And hello there. Catherine, are you with us?
I'm with you.
There it is. It worked. And you're in one piece.
West of the Mississippi. Here I am.
The last time we tried this, the person came back in several pieces. It didn't work. So I'm glad you're here. What brings you through the L.A. area?
I'm road tripping. I'm on a three-week road trip from San Francisco to Memphis.
Every economist I have talked to over the last 2 months says that we are on the verge of a major collapse. Do you feel that way?
I would say we're on the verge of a major reengineering. Could it be a collapse? Yes, but it could be a controlled demolition.
As bad as 2008?
Very different, because we're in for a very... You know, what we did was we entered into very aggressive monetary policy, but we didn't re-engineer institutions, and now we're in for a significant overhaul of institutions.
Will it be different from 2008? Because what really caused that, I believe, was the housing bubble, right?
No, what caused that was securities fraud.
Don't hold back. All right. Well, yeah, but what makes you believe that stopped?
It didn't. In 2015, we just had in August, the Department of Defense Inspector General George announced that undocumentable adjustments at the Department of Defense year end were $6.5 trillion, during the year were $2.8 for a total of $9.3 trillion, which brings missing money from the federal government since fiscal 1998 up to $21
trillion. $21
trillion
missing.
Add the bailouts, and we're up to $50 trillion, which is $150,000 for every man, woman, and child in America.
Catherine, I go nuts if I can't find a $20 bill I thought I had in my pocket or wallet.
Well, but can you imagine your bank sending you a statement, and to reconcile it with your accounts, you would write undocumentable adjustment $9.3 trillion?
Doesn't make any sense. Somebody has that money, right?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do, and that's where the securities fraud comes in.
Have we used it to buy off government leaders, other countries, lining the pockets of people in government? Maybe it's in their bank accounts?
Here's part of it is, George, that the real system, as evidenced by the cash flows, has become so different than the official system. You know, it's almost you need a bungee rope in your head, but let me give you a couple of theories on where the money went.
Okay.
One, I think it's being used to prop up the system in a variety of ways within the United States. Two, I think after fiscal 1997, we decided to move a lot of money and reinvest it globally in the emerging markets. Mm-hmm. So we globalized. I think the black budget has been a very significant user of the missing money and sort of the securities fraud evidenced by the bailouts. And it's also possible that knowing that you had to re-engineer the system, you moved enough money into private endowments so you could run a world government off of the dividends and interest.
Jeez.
I mean, think of it. If you earn 5% a year on just what's been stolen,
that's
2.5 trillion a year. You can run
free money.
You can run the equivalent of the U.S. government. Yeah. So let me take you back to a story I first told you in 2005. In 1997, right before the beginning of federal fiscal year, I showed a plan to a group of pension fund investors, including the largest pension fund in the country, CalPERS, California. Right. How we could re-engineer the government budget and have a dramatic improvement in wealth that would really help the pension funds meet their mm-hmm. targets, because that's what we were worried about. How do we meet the targets for the baby boomers? And the president of CalPERS looked at me literally with tears in his eye, and he said, oh, my God. He said, you don't understand. They've given up on the country. They're moving all the money out starting in the fall, which was the beginning of fiscal 1998, and he said, you know, you've got to get to the, you know, and he named some names, you've got to get to them and let them know it's not hopeless. But he was clear that a decision had been made, and I thought when he said it, he meant that all the money that could be moved legally would be moved.
Right.
I didn't understand he was talking about a financial coup d'etat. And what I'm now talking about on this O'Leary report is called cut and run, because if you look at the patterns of DOD, what's happening with Wells Fargo, what's happening with the Germans and Deutsche Bank, what I think we're watching is a cut and run, where you're literally taking an enormous amount and you're watching a lot of the insiders getting their money out, which is why I think we're coming into a very major change.
One of our guests, Jonathan Kahn, has written a book, and basically he talks about the Jewish Shemitah. I mean, here we are in Rosh Hashanah right now. But he talks about the Shemitah, which is a collapse that he says happens every 7 years, and he's pretty darn close.
My guess that one of the things you want to watch is there's an effort right now to get a constitutional budget, a constitutional convention, and an amendment to the Constitution for a balanced budget. So imagine, you take $50 trillion out of the pot, then you pass a balanced budget amendment so that you can then essentially re-engineer all the contracts and obligations to the people left. It's kind of, you know, if you've ever seen the A-Team, it's the double Framus, right, if you will. So that's why I would call it more a controlled demolition, because the way this is going to come about is you're going to get a new administration after the inauguration, and then what you're going to have to do is face all of this to the U.S. federal budget, because we've been centralizing the economy through the U.S. federal budget, and we could do that because we've been pumping out the debt. But that model is over. The debt finance growth model is over, and so now we're coming into a change. And the question is, how's that change going to work? I would argue with new technology, you could do that change in a way that would create an explosive amount of wealth. Explosive.
All over the place.
Right. And so if you look, for example, if you look at the price of energy, it's been coming down, down, down. We see solar panels down 80% since 2010. We see fracking technology bringing the price. So if you keep bringing the price of energy down, George, you know, that is the greatest expense in most, certainly in most manufacturing budgets, most people's budgets. You bring that down, you know, you have a lot of juice in the system. But the question is, you know, you have to have an economic model where people want to cooperate and optimize. And right now, you know, we have an economic model where we are all at war with each other. And that can never work.
All right, so let's look at what's been going on. I want to talk with you about interest rates and what that all means to all of us.
Ooh.
Catherine, we'll get into that. I want to get your take on Trump and Clinton, or Clinton and Trump. No favoritism here on my part, and we'll get into that. And in less than 2 hours, as a matter of fact, in about an hour and 32 minutes, we're waiting for some kind of remark from Julian Assange.
I cannot wait.
At WikiLeaks. Have no idea what he's going to talk about. Everybody thinks it's about Hillary Clinton, but who knows what it is?
Well, did you see what WikiLeaks put out on Twitter today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Can we drone this guy?
You know what? We're afraid and everything. So we'll see, and we're going to monitor that situation. That is, you will be just getting off the air with me when that happens. And maybe we might hold you over for get your reaction to that. Just an incredible story. So stay with us. We're going to be back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Catherine Austin Fitz. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Catherine Austin Fitz. We are an hour and 22 minutes away, apparently, from Julian Assange's expected announcement in through video in Berlin, where they're going to release this about something. I love it when you have to say, Catherine, something. Because we really don't know what it is.
Because it's really, really big.
Everybody's speculating, but I hate to speculate until I know what it is.
I know, you don't know.
Now, poor journalism, you speculate, they're, you know, doing all these things. Let's just wait and see what it is.
Okay.
He probably might release his cooking food list for the week. Who knows? You never know. So I want to talk about the election, and I want to get your take on just what's going on. In my career, I have never seen a worse presidential campaign.
This is pretty low.
It is. It's the bottom of the barrel. And I don't know what to say about it.
Glenn Beck was talking about it the other day. He said, I feel homeless in my own country.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't feel homeless. I feel disappointed.
I'm disappointed.
You know, and it's embarrassing throughout the nation, throughout the world, when they see two presidential candidates in the muck doing what they're doing.
My favorite editorial writer is Peggy Noonan for the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And she wrote, I think, the best line of the whole campaign season. She said, in this great nation of 320 million people, it's going to come down to crazy man versus criminal.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. I mean, they're making a big issue about his taxes. Look, apparently he didn't break the law. This was in 1995. He took advantage of every legal deduction he could. I'm sure he paid his accountants a fortune. And the fact that he didn't pay any taxes, he was entitled not to pay them.
Yeah, I just put a commentary up at Salary.com called Crazy Man versus Criminal. It sort of analyzes our current situation. And to a certain extent, I have to tell you, I think the presidential campaign is a distraction from what's really going on. But one of the things I said was that I think the tax issues are completely irrelevant to the decision as to how you're going to assess the candidates. And more important, it's important to understand this is inside baseball. The administration has them under audit. If you are under audit with the IRS, the last thing he needs to do is disclose any taxes right now. So he's taking the right position, and most people just don't understand what it's like to be put in that kind of legal
vise. This is what I would have done. If I were a reporter asking him about his taxes, I would have said, Mr. Trump, what year are you being audited for? So you kind of force him to tell you that, right?
Right.
So let's say he says, I'm being audited for 2015, 2014. I'll say, fine, can you release 2013, which is not part of your audit?
If I were him, I still wouldn't do it because he is in partnerships and deals with a whole series of people he has confidential obligations to. And if you're in the audit, if you're in an audit with some of them on one, you could create problems by making public the other one. So I would
guess, though, Catherine, the reason why he has stonewalled it, audit aside, was the fact that he took a $900-some million loss and just didn't want people to know that.
Could be. George, I have no idea why, but to me, it's irrelevant. He took that loss because under the law he was entitled to take that loss.
And he can carry it forward, and he won't be paying taxes for a long time.
He's an entrepreneur. When you're an entrepreneur, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. He's always told the story of walking down the street and telling his daughter as they passed a beggar, you know, that guy has more equity than I do.
All right, so Julian Assange aside, if you had to make a decision now, who do you think would win? Based on things you've heard, the ups and the downs, who would win?
I think that the establishment will pull out all stops to essentially rig the election for Hillary Clinton.
Really?
I think they will pull out every stop they can for a couple reasons, George. One is, you know, we've centralized the economy dramatically in the last 3 decades, and the people who manage that centralized thing, you know, Clinton is someone they know they can do business with. They're relatively comfortable with her as sort of the spokesperson. That's number one. Number two, one of the biggest problems they have in the global economy is that the way they can improve productivity growth is with new technology, which is very deflationary. One of the few ways they have of increasing productivity growth is to pull a lot more women into the workforce globally.
Sure.
And if you look at the GNP of the United States plus the GNP of women globally, if the U.S. plays the soft, you know, woman's card globally, then, you know, those two GNPs beat China and Asia. So this is how G7 can compete globally in a world where you're up against, you know, 2.5 billion Chinese and Indians. So they've really, you know, the African American card worked great for them. You know, it pulled off the bailouts, it pulled off Obamacare. So I think they very much want a woman. And the problem was they chose a woman who you've reached a point where the debt growth model and the centralization has been so destructive of human productivity in the United States that you're seeing an enormous backlash against the establishment. And, you know, it's funny, I just saw an interview with Michael Moore. He said Donald Trump is the Molotov cocktail that the heartland's planning on throwing. And they don't begin to understand the damage they're doing to the U.S. economy, you know, in the way they've run the economy for the last 20 years. And to most people in the heartland, Hillary Clinton is a symbol of that, those policies and that damage. So, you know, there's been a financial coup d'etat and it's been rigged with government money and government rules. And that is at the heart of this issue, ugly as the campaign may see.
Who do you think of the two would be the better leader?
Well, I think that Clinton, to me, Clinton signals hopelessness.
Really? You know,
yeah, right. The complete hope. We're just going to keep doing what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Status quo.
Well, but more centralization, more people harmed, more people. So, you know, more top-down force. I think Trump is a complete wild card. I can make arguments very positive and very negative. One of the things the economy needs is transparency. During this campaign, he's brought a lot more transparency, you know, than almost anybody else. Bernie Sanders, too.
But, you know, no one person runs the show. I mean, we all know that.
When whoever is inaugurated will not run the government.
No.
The government will not be run by whoever is inaugurated. The person who wins will be the spokesperson.
And the corporations, they're the ones who run this country.
Right.
They always have. I mean, as Eisenhower warned, be wary of the industrial military complex.
I think Eisenhower's warning is the thing we need to pay attention to, and that's why I'm so concerned about this push for a constitutional convention and a balanced budget amendment. Because if you open up what we need right now, George, if $21 trillion is missing from U.S. government accounts, what we need to do is enforce the Constitution by saying, where's the money? Let's get it back.
Right. It would be easy to track, would it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There are databases. You have a small group of banks at the New York Fed who are the bank depositories, and you have a small group of IT defense contractors who ran the IT. One of the reasons I've been talking about cut and run is at the DOD Inspector General made their announcement about the missing money in August. In July, Lockheed Martin, the largest defense contractor providing the IT systems, spun off their IT into a company that one of the other largest IT spun their company off several years ago. And so we're now seeing those guys basically spin those divisions out of their balance sheet to get the liabilities out. Because when the budget comes to the fore, everybody's going to say, where's the money and how do we hold these guys accountable? And whether it's the banks or the IT providers, it's going to be a very uncomfortable conversation.
Interest rates. The Fed so far has held interest rates to the level that they've been at for a long, long time. There's talk that it could go up in December. I don't think it will. What do you think?
I think the Fed really wants to bump them just a tiny bit, just to say they did it.
They're at 0.025 right now, aren't
right.
they?
Right. Yeah. Their challenge, George, is that you've got dollar borrowers all around the world who are in very sensitive positions, and the U.S. economy is not as strong as they expected. Now, you know, you want to keep interest rates low to keep that liquidity going. At the same time, you have an entire world of pension funds and insurance companies whose whole business model depends as their bonds roll over and they need to reinvest. They need to get interest earnings.
They need that. Meanwhile, right. though, the stocks will fall if the rates
yes.
go up.
Right, but sometimes you need to cut the method on, George.
Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to. So as you look at things, look, you've been in the economic field for a long, long time. As young as you are, you've been in it for a long time. If you were advising one of these two candidates, who one of those two probably will get elected, you never know what's going to happen. They could go to Congress. Who knows, right? what would you tell them about the economy? What would we do to increase jobs, for example?
Well, I think the first thing you need is transparency. So, and particularly transparency in terms of government money. One of the things I did this year was write a letter to my congresswoman and to several other congresspeople basically saying, you know, we need to be able to read the U.S. federal budget for our congressional district. And we need to start looking at ways of reoptimizing the federal money because the opportunities are tremendous. Then the second thing is we need to integrate new technology into the infrastructure of this country, George. We've dramatically underinvested in infrastructure. So we need to do that as well. There is a we're basically driving small business out of business with regulation, federal, state, and some local regulation. There is tremendous amounts if we changed in, for example, the food safety rules or in the capital raising and crowdfunding, where we could small business could thrive again because this technology should help the little guy. But we have to let the little guy and the big guy compete head on head, as opposed to making all the rules to advantage the big guys in a way that is not good for the markets and the economy. So I would really open up the ability of small business to perform in this environment and create jobs, because that's, you know, small business traditionally was the
staple.
Right.
Wasn't
that
it?
Was the other thing I would do is I would find a way to dramatically reduce or wipe out the student loan, because you need your young people to build your economy, and they can't build the economy if they're struggling under debt. I think that what's happened with the student loans is one of the most horrible, fraudulent things we've ever seen. Yeah.
I was looking at my son's statements today because I pay it. And
right.
I looked at that, and, you know, he went and got his master's degree. And, you know, he's doing well on his own in business. But
look at what's happening. Your bank deposits are earning almost nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
And he's not. Why should the Fed member banks be able to borrow at a quarter of 1%? And the kids of this country have to borrow at 5, 6, 7, 8%. George, that is basically squeezing every family in America.
Well, and not only that, the principal is high.
Right.
The principal is high. Now, look, nobody dragged my kids to college.
Right.
They went on their own, and a daddy helped them. But I sure would have been happier if the rates were lower. Interest and the principal, the amount of tuition.
Well, but I'm gonna play a tough guy now, because I was part of a group of people in Washington, you know, both private and public sector, who said, look, we're going to globalize. We have to help the middle class re-engineer and jump the curve on the situation. You know, so you remember Newt Gingrich running around saying, get every kid a laptop. It was all about helping them do that. And instead of it, we bubbled the economy. We encouraged people to take on far more debt than possible. We dramatically increased college tuition way past the consumer price.
Way past.
And we encouraged all these kids to study things, George, that wouldn't make them relevant in a global economy. And I consider that fraudulent inducement.
Well, how many colleges would still be around if they had to slash tuition costs by 60%, let's say?
Well, if they just kept tuition same as the CPI, you know, if they just kept them tracked,
it would have been fair.
But the thing they most needed to do was make sure that the curriculum was relevant to what the kids needed to be doing, you know, this year, next year, 10 years from now.
Catherine, Vladimir Putin is really flexing his muscles these days. He's getting tough on a lot of things,
right?
Threatening us in Syria, you know, pulling away at this plutonium deal that we just did.
Right.
Something's going on here.
Well, I think the biggest danger, George, given what's happening with the economy and the cash flows, is not collapse. I think the big danger is war.
A World War III.
Yeah.
But I think if there is one, don't you think China will join with Russia?
I don't know. I think it's murky and very fluid.
See, I look at what's going on with Putin and China and North Korea and the flexing of muscles as almost like road rage. You've got two groups of people who are in their cars, going and doing their business, going wherever they wanted to go, and something happens. And one gets ticked off at the other, and it's out of control.
Well, one group needs a global model and everybody in the model. And Russia and the interests they represent don't want to be in that model. And so you're having a war. You know, I've always said we've been on the central banking warfare model for 500 years, and the model has to morph. It has to evolve. We can't stay on it. It's, you know, it's, if you're going to globalize, then everybody has to come in, and you can't, you know, extract subsidy from the third world. You have to get into a much more global model. And what we're watching is dueling models. We haven't agreed on the model yet.
And it's all screwed up. The people we are supporting in Syria that we wanted to get Assad out, that's ISIS. We helped create that portion of it. And then they went nuts in Iraq because they were, most of them were Saddam Hussein's military that we tossed out, and they didn't have jobs. So those people are all ticked off. So they became ISIS, and the whole thing's a mess.
Well, it's the red button problem. In other words, we've been extracting subsidy globally by running the U.S. dollar reserve currency and doing one thing and saying another, trying to get natural resources cheap. And we've used our military might to do it. And the reality is we've said one thing and we've done another. And as I've told you, George, everybody in America wants their check. So the leadership is in a double bind.
What scares you right now about what's going on this planet? Anything?
I'll tell you what scares me the most, because I ultimately believe that what's happening is spiritual warfare.
Explain.
And, you know, so, well, I believe this is really about our immortal souls. I believe our souls are immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And but what we can do in a lifetime is literally compromise our immortal souls. And what I see is Western culture, Western civilization being debased, and being debased in a way that really does complement or compromise our spiritual power. And so I'm really concerned that we're coming into a period of leadership that is promoting inhumane treatment. So, for example, if you look at the African slave trade during the 1800s, what you discover is one of the reasons that we shut down the slave trade was because there was no way to perfect collateral. So the banks kept getting burnt on financing the slave trade. Well, now with digital technology, we have a way of perfecting collateral. And what you watch, we just had NBC run a spot saying, you know, we should microchip our children. Are you crazy? So you know, I see us moving towards microchipping and transhumanism and things which I consider to be very inhumane.
Well, the microchips are the new social security numbers. You know, they gave us all those cards and numbers. You can't get a job without a social security number. And I think the chipping is the next evolution. And what are we going to do? How are we going to stop that?
My choice for the number one tweet in the third quarter, you know, we do the third quarter, we just finished the third quarter wrap up, is somebody sent out the story of NIH approving the mixing of animal and human DNA.
Chimeras.
Right. And he said on the cover on his tweet, he said, just please nuke us now. Funny, but not funny.
Stay with us. Catherine Austin Fitz with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, she's with us. We are going to open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to chat with Catherine. And then in about an hour and a half, hour and 3 minutes, actually now, Julian Assange, through the video, is supposed to make some kind of WikiLeaks announcement. All kinds of speculation, of which I am not going to do. I'm simply going to wait and find out what he says. Stick with us. Also, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, where Lex is sending out information like crazy tonight.